Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas on Tuesday, March the 26th, and today we're going to chat with our friend Frank Burke up in Wisconsin. Frank, of course, a businessman and author and a great friend of our show. We're going to talk about the State of the Union address and the communication issues with President Joe Biden, and we're also going to talk a little bit about what's happening in New York with what I think is they're singling out the political persecution of Donald Trump, which is backfiring, I believe, big time on the Democrats. So let me say hello to our friend Frank. Frank, how is the weather in Wisconsin?
Well, it's been lovely. It's been actually back and forth between cold and warm, unseasonably warm. Now it's seasonable. It's about in the 40s. And today we have a lot of rain, which is not bad, because we need it.
Yeah, I think we all need rain. We had some rain early in the week too, and I think everybody needs. You know, it's funny. Rain is one of those things that everybody hates, but everybody needs.
Yes. But you know, it's funny when I was in upstate New York, nothing was as beautiful as that first shower when it was no longer snow coming down, but you had drops of rain on the windshield of the car. That was perfect.
Yes. Well, Frank, it's Easter week, so you mentioned New York. Do you have any memories of Easter? Anything unusual that you remember? Anything that like when Easter comes, anything that comes to mind from your younger days, any Easter week memories that you say, wow, we used to do that, anything like that?
Yes, but some of them not terribly pleasant, because I hated getting dressed up. I still do. And the custom was, my father worked for Sears, and he worked in the auto center, but the people who worked there got a discount in the department store. So every year, shortly before Easter, we would go and get new clothes. And, you know, for a dress suit for a kid, it was wool. And my skin is very sensitive. It's that typical Irish skin. I don't tan, I burn, and then I go back to pasty white. And it's very annoying and itchy. And then, you know, a number of Easters, I remember one was 80 degrees in New York, and it was hot. And Easter could be very, very hot. Now, yeah, the chocolate eggs and the marshmallow eggs were very nice. But other than that, I've got to tell you, it was not my favorite holiday.
Yeah. Well, you know, the memories that I have are interesting, too, because it's not really my favorite holiday either, because it at least when we were growing up in Cuba, you know, it was kind of a very solemn holiday. It wasn't really any celebration.
Yes.
So it was one of those holidays that you were kind of looking forward to Sunday, because that was the only day that you could have any fun. And but the one thing that really stands out in my mind is we come to the United States and we have our first Easter week in the United States, and we call it in Spanish, we call it Semana Santa. You know, that's what we call it in Spanish,
sure,
which literally translates to Holy Week. So we're sitting here in our first week, our first Holy Week or Easter week in the United States, and I'm watching a baseball game on Good Friday on TV, and my mother says, "You mean to tell me they play baseball on Good Friday?" And I said, "Yeah, this is a little different than Cuba, Mom. They... So that was the one memory, I guess. Every time I think of Good Friday or this week, it sort of takes me back to that memory of my mother saying, "You mean to tell me they play baseball on Good Friday?" It was just,
for her,
it was a real shock, to tell you the truth.
I'm glad you brought that up because it brings back another memory. My great aunt, like my grandmother, was very strict. You could not have a TV or a radio on Good Friday. The only thing you might be able to watch was if the Big Sheen program was on. And you got turned on, there's Bishop Sheen. When it's over, it got turned off. And the story in the family, now, she was born in 1875, and her mother was born in, I think, 1835.
Wow.
And the story was that, you know, Lincoln was shot in Ford's Theater on Good Friday. It was a Good Friday.
That's correct, yeah.
Her mother, we said, "What was he doing in the theater on Good Friday?"
Yes.
So, that was the attitude.
Right. Yeah, why was he watching a comedy on Good Friday, right?
What kind of man is that?
Yeah, what kind of man watches a comedy on Good Friday? No, but that's the memory I have of just how, you know, how everything was so strict. Everything was so quiet, and we were basically told to calm it down. We were basically told, you know, tune it down, just, you know, turn it down. You're not supposed to be, you know. And Good Friday was usually a day where we didn't really do a lot. You know, we just kind of sat around, and it's not that we were praying. I don't remember praying, but we were just kind of sitting around, you know, letting the 24 hours go by, kind of, you know what I mean? Not too active.
Yeah, hoping it would end quick. I know what you
right,
mean.
Right, right. And then on when Easter Sunday came, then, you know, Easter Sunday came, then it was like everything was let loose.
Yes, but the thing that always drove me crazy, and I've always fought against it, and I still feel the same way. We were always told Easter, the most significant holiday in the Christian religion, because that's the day Christ rose from the dead. To which I respond, well, wait a minute. Christmas has to be just as significant, because if Christ didn't come to earth as a man and be born on Christmas, there would have been nothing unusual about him rising from the dead. If he had come down from heaven on a cloud, it would have been nothing unusual. It would have been, you know, one miracle follows another. But the fact that Christmas was, I've always said Christmas has to be equal to Easter. It's the balance of the two.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. I've never really thought of it that way, but I, you know, I enjoy all of them. But I have to admit, I enjoy Christmas a lot more than I enjoy Easter week or Holy
too.
Week. I just found that, you know how it is, you know, it's just a little bit too solemn. I mean, I understand the significance of it, but at least when we were kids, I mean, it was a very solemn day. And my mother saying, "You mean to tell me they play baseball on Friday?" Yeah, they do. They do. And that, but I'm going to have to remember the one you just told me about. What was he doing? What was Lincoln doing? And watching a comedy. That tops them all, as far as I'm concerned. Well, Frank, you and I lived in Baltimore different times, but I was there in the 70s. I don't remember if you were when you were there, but I went to school there at Towson State. And you know, the famous bridge. I'm sure you're familiar with the story. You know, the ship running into the bridge. What they're saying is that it was just, I guess, just a bad luck. I mean, there was nothing, no sign of terrorism or anything intentional. I guess just bad luck. And what was your reaction to that?
Well, you know, I was very sorry to hear it
yes.
because of people that were involved. But apparently what I had heard this morning was that the ship lost power. As a result, they were unable to steer it. And it just, in effect, drifted into the bridge. But you know, when something like that happens, all you say is, thank God it was at 1 o'clock in the morning and not at rush hour, because if it was rush hour, the thing would have just gone down with all kinds of traffic on it.
Yes. Well, I learned today, Frank, that 45,000 people use that bridge every day. I had no idea that the traffic was like that. And I remember being on that trip on that bridge a couple of times. Not a lot, because I don't remember where that bridge takes you to, but the one bridge that I was more familiar with was the one that went to Ocean City, that big one.
Yes.
That went to Ocean City. That one I took many times. But
right.
This particular bridge, I think it was called Bay Bridge, I think, the one that went to Ocean City, I think.
Right. It was over Chesapeake Bay. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. That one I remember taking many times. But this one, Francis Scott Key, I remember a few times, but I cannot tell you, you know, that it was a lot of times. But do you remember where it goes?
You know, it goes over basically South Baltimore. It skirts Baltimore on the south side. And we really had no reason to be on the south side, be going through the south side. When I was there, I lived in the Mount Vernon area, which was the central part of the city. And you typically went east, west, or north. There wasn't much on the south side unless, you know, you had friends there.
Well, it was the more industrial side of town, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was. There were the old, Asarco, the sugar plant, Domino Cane Sugar was there.
Yeah.
Around that, it was the way in which you would go to some of the old steel plants.
Right, exactly.
Steel was the big employer in Baltimore in those days.
Yes, I remember that as well. But anyway, a terrible tragedy. You're right. Imagine if this had been at 5 o'clock in the morning. That would have been, or even 7 o'clock or 1 o'clock in the afternoon. But one question. I was listening to a radio show this morning, and somebody called in with a really good question, and I don't have the answer for it. And the question was the ship coming in or going out? Do you know?
Yes, it was going out.
Oh, okay.
It was a general port, and apparently it was on its way to, I think, Sri Lanka. It was owned by an outfit out of Singapore. But the thing that amazed me is, you know, when you see those boats and they are stacked, the decks are stacked with everything, they said that it took about 48 hours from the time the boat got in for it to be unloaded and reloaded, and then it was on the way out.
Hmm.
And the maintenance was a kind of constant issue. But, you know, now, in pardon the expression, the old days, I'm sure what would have happened is they would have brought the ship in, they would have been there a while, and they would have gone over it very thoroughly in maintaining it to see, you know, if there were any problems. Because if it lost power, obviously there was something wrong with a generator or one of the motors that would drive a generator.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. It just amazes me. You said that ship was going to Sri Lanka, so that means they would cross the Atlantic, right, and go, I don't know where, I guess it would go under, you know, down by South Africa and on the way to Sri Lanka. That's a lot of containers to be out in the open ocean. I mean, especially with the type of weather you can get out in the, I mean, it amazes me that those ships hold together all that container in the middle of some of the rough weather than some of the rough seas that these ships go through.
Absolutely. When you look at the container ships and you look at the oil tankers, the size of them is absolutely incredible. And, you know, you think, wow. A friend of mine was in the Merchant Marine, and, you know, I've talked to him, and I said, you know, who insures these things? And he said, well, you would probably would have four or companies insuring any of those ships, because the exposure would be too great for any one company.
Well, I guarantee you that there were some insurance companies this morning talking to each other about what the heck's going to happen here, because obviously this is going to be a costly problem for somebody. Losing power. I mean, it's just remarkable. And you can actually see the video of when it hits the bridge. I mean, it's amazing.
Yes. And I think what will happen is when they rebuild the bridge, the design will be substantially different in that it will be such that if the bridge is hit in one part, the whole thing does not collapse the way that did.
Yeah. Well, according to what I've read, that bridge was either finished or refurbished in 1977. So it's 47 years old, 46, 47 years old. But I don't know I'm not sure if that's the original date because these bridges get refurbished from time to time, you know. So
right,
I'm not sure about the dates.
Yeah, I really don't know myself.
Yeah.
As you say, that visual is something you'll never forget.
And it was the first thing that I saw this morning, Frank. When I woke up, I checked the iPhone for any breaking news, and that was it. They had the video right there, and I saw that in the morning. So I guess there's always a Joe Biden component to any of these things. And President Biden today was talking about, how the federal government is going to help and so on, which is, I guess, what you would expect. And then he said that he was on the train many times over that bridge. So I thought, what a way to spoil the speech.
Oh, the tragedy is we can laugh about it, but the enemies of the country are watching this. And they're saying you have a senile buffoon in the driver's seat. You have somebody there who's being run by other people. Suppose they tell them to do something. What happens if somebody attacks us? Who is going to be making the decisions on what our response is?
Right.
And that's very simple. What's going to happen if some of these people that they have, the Democrat Party, has let across the border perform the act of terrorism that everybody feels is inevitable?
Yes.
What's the response?
Yeah, who's going to answer that 3 o'clock phone call? And that's sometimes they come in at that time of the day,
Exactly.
Unbelievable. Anyway, let's talk a little bit about President Biden, though, in a different context. He gave a speech, State of the Union speech, and he was very energetic in that speech. I haven't seen him like that before. The next day, though, he was back to his old self, very typical, more typical Biden. But it didn't have any political impact whatsoever, Frank, the speech. It did not have a bounce, as they like to say these days. I mean, it basically went in one ear and went in one ear and out the other ear of the American voter. And I was wondering, and I want to get your thoughts on this, because you do a lot of communications, and over the years, you in advertising, obviously, you work a great deal on message. And when I was watching the speech, I said to myself, I wonder what Frank would say about his message tonight. So I like to hear that, but I also, my sense, Frank, when I listened to the speech, is two things. Number one, he didn't really say anything, and number two, people don't want to be shouted at by their president. I mean, you're sitting there in your living room, this guy's shouting at you, or at least half of the country. He's giving away money to one half and shouting at the other. That's my impression, Frank. So that's not a winning message.
I think it's very correct, and you're absolutely right. I think, as someone said, it's like watching a senile uncle who's, had too much to drink going off.
Yeah, your senile uncle telling you to return your library books on time.
Right, right. And basically, that's what it was. It was obvious that he was on some kind of stimulant. And it was very campaign-related, the speech. It was not a State of the Union address. It was totally undignified, is basically what it is. This was not the President of the United States talking to the American people. This was a nut screaming and yelling and trying to get a message across, hoping that it would impress enough people that would reelect him. And God forbid that happens, because he's a dangerous man. And there's just that you can take in this, that, you know, why? The answer is why? What are we going to do in this situation?
Right. No, you're right about that. And but what I was, you know, watching it, and I kind of got the feeling that he had the objective that night was not to do a State of the Union, which is of course what he was supposed to do, but to make basically convince people that he was up to the job, meaning that he had enough energy to look like he was on top of the job, that to look like he could read a speech, that he could deliver a speech, that he could energize his base. That's the impression I got out of it. I didn't think that he was trying to talk to me or try to persuade me that maybe I should have a second look at his record. It seemed like he was writing, let's say, me off and concentrating on motivating his side of the aisle, Frank.
I think you're absolutely right on that, Sylvia. And I think the I don't think it worked, because a lot of the stuff that he was saying was illogical. There were enough stumbles in it, enough untruths, that even the people on his side, or on, let's say, on the Democrat side, would have to be embarrassed by it. And, you know, you saw the media, and they were all using the same words to describe it. I know Joe is back, and Joe is wonderful, and he's strong, and well, you know, no, I don't think any sane person would believe that. That's not the takeaway you get from that speech. And
no.
It's a shame we had to endure it.
Yeah, it is, because, you know, the State of the Union is not really supposed to be political. Now, it is political in the sense that it's being delivered by a politician, particularly on an election year. So you got to cut him a little slack. But I thought he showed no respect whatsoever for people on the other side. He didn't say anything to persuade me that he has the best interest of the country or that he wants to do something good for all of us. It seemed like he was focusing only on his side of the aisle. And I don't know, is that a good advertising strategy? I mean, from your days in advertising, is that a good advertising strategy to advertise
terrible.
That way, Frank?
It's a terrible advertising strategy, because a lot of the times the people who decide the election, especially in a close election, are the independents. And if you're only talking to the Democrats, you know, you are ignoring a very large voting bloc. But more than that, even, there's a realization that somebody who would do this is not and cannot be and will not be the president of all the people, or to put it another way, the president of the United States. You've got somebody who is just screaming and yelling and, as you say, yelling at people, insulting the Supreme Court,
yes.
Making all kinds of comments that just don't make sense.
No, and I thought it was interesting, too. The vice president would get up every 20 seconds. I don't know if they had like an alarm clock or something around her wrist where she would get up every 20 seconds to applaud. And I
yes.
thought that looked phony also. It didn't look real.
No. And well, look at her. I mean, talk about unreal. This is her to a T. But yeah, you're right. And it's one of those things where it was stagey. It was wrong. It was very unclassy. There was no class to it.
Right.
Is not what we want out of our president. Now, granted,
no, not at
Donald
all.
Trump, from time to time, can become, you know, vulgar or angry, but you know he's got it together, and there's a big difference between
right.
Trump, who has it together, and Joe Biden, who is seeing railroad trains and riding on them where there are none.
Right, that's right. Yeah, he took that, you know, he took the train on that bridge many times, Frank. I think that's all you need to, that's all I need to know, that maybe he, the elevator doesn't go up to the last floor, as they like to say, you know. Frank, let me take you to New York, your home state, for a second. I think they're out to get Trump. I think it's backfiring on them. But this trial,
yeah.
You know, the trial of, you know, $500 million, and then this woman accusing him of something that happened 30 years ago. You know, my friend Bill Katz was telling me a story about that department store. I don't know the name of it, but there's a very famous department store in New York where this, I guess a very exclusive department store where this allegedly happened.
Right.
And it happened about 30 years. What is it? What's the name of it? I forgot the name of it.
I think it's Bloomingdale's.
Okay, but it's supposed to be very exclusive and very
yeah.
expensive. In fact, they even have security all over because a lot of rich people go there to check out dresses or whatever. And so my friend says, my friend Bill Katz was saying, how is it possible that a guy like Donald Trump, who was extremely well known in New York 30 years ago, I mean, he was synonymous in many ways with the city. How can he walk into a department store, go through security, go up to the ladies' section, walk into the room where ladies are trying on new dresses, rape a woman, come out, and nobody remembers it happened? Nobody remembers
mm-hmm.
that it happened, Frank.
Well, you know, I have an perhaps even more, shall we say, pointed question. Donald Trump was always a big man. How could you complete that act in a fitting room? How
well,
could you?
He is. It's a good point. He's a big guy. You know, I mean, he walks anywhere. Everybody sees him. He's a big fellow.
Right. And how could he fit? How could the two of them fit in terms of, you know, making an attack in a fitting room? Not only that, but this woman is, you know, she goes out and paints trees blue. She is extremely peculiar, and it's, you know, there's no logical reason for listening to her. And
right.
Simply like what's going on with the Daniels case and what's going on with the other case in New York, it's when someone says, As this woman, Letitia James, or whatever her name is, when she said, I'll get Trump, that's not justice.
No.
You can't have people running for office to represent justice on a platform of, I'm going to get a particular citizen. I don't care about the law. I'm just going
right.
to get them. And if someone said, it's like what Stalin used to say, show me this person and I'll make up the crime.
Right. But being compared to Stalin should not make New Yorkers proud.
Oh, no.
You know,
well,
because, I mean, the one thing about New York, Frank, and you know it better than I do, but New York, especially the legal system, that especially there, that particular district that we're talking about, it's always been very well known, and a lot of top people have gone through that district. You know, a lot of top politicians have gone through that district. But it always had a reputation of being very professional, and I think that this persecution of Trump is really hurting the image or the brand of the state of New York as a place to do business. I mean, people are pulling out their money saying, hey, if they do it to Trump, they can do it to me, Frank.
Right. And in every way, they are making all the mistakes. You know, some years ago, when Michael Bloomberg was mayor, he was thinking about what they're talking about now, a wealth tax, a tax specifically aimed toward wealthy New Yorkers. But being a businessman, he did his market research. And what they discovered was the fact that something like, you know, a 40 41% of the, or 49% of the taxes that New York collects paid by under 10,000 people. And these were the people who had money. And that if you did this, if you put up a special tax, they would leave. Any number of them would leave New York. Because why would you do this? You can go back to New York. You can enjoy the shows and the restaurants and then get on a plane and go back to Florida or Texas or wherever it is that the taxes are less or none. And so he didn't do it. But these people are too dumb, frankly, to understand that.
Right. No, and that's exactly right. I mean, if you punish the people who produce, who create, who are the ones paying the taxes, eventually you're going to drive them out. And that's happening in California. That's happening in New York. That's happening in Illinois. And, you know, we see it here, Frank, because so many people from California are moving here. Now, it's a blessing. It's a kind of a, it's a double blessing, I guess, whatever the expression is, because on one hand, they're moving here and they're bringing their taxes to that they'll pay. But on the other hand, they're inflating the cost of housing because they're increasing demand for housing. So the cost of homes in Texas has gone up, you know, significantly because of all these new people coming in, buying homes and bidding on homes and all of that. So, you know, it's good and bad, I guess. Nothing is perfect. But it's more good than bad because it's a lot of productive people who are coming here. But you see it in New York, the number of people that they're losing because of this crazy stuff. I mean, you cannot target a businessman and not realize that it's going to have a consequence on other businessmen, Frank.
No, and the fact is, I think there was a about it. But I think there was a secondary reason for doing this. The first reason, of course, was to get Trump. These people met at the White House with the Biden administration, and this is to try and rig the election, to deprive Trump of the ability to run, or if he runs, to win an election. Okay, so that's the first reason. But the second reason was this. New York is going broke because of it's a sanctuary city. They've got the illegals in some of the best hotels. They're paying all these welfare benefits. And I think they really wanted secondarily to confiscate his assets. And this is a message to everybody. If they can do it to Trump, can invent a law and accuse him of this law, of breaking this law, and take his money, they can do it to anybody, and they will, because they're desperate people. And that's part of the problem. You know,
you're exactly right. That's exactly the objective, and that is the consequence, that people will get out of town. I find it deplorable. I guess the only good news is that all of these cases will go to appeal, and I think wiser minds or wiser heads will prevail in appeal, and hopefully this can all be reversed. And then when it all gets appealed and reversed, I hope that Donald Trump sues the heck out of the Attorney General, I hope he does, because he deserves that, and not so much to make any money. He has plenty of money, but just to teach him a lesson. Well, Frank, you've made my day today with that Lincoln story. I will tell that story to everybody I talk to from now on about your grandmother and Lincoln, or your great-grandmother, right, and Lincoln. Yeah, I think that is the greatest Easter story that I've heard in quite some time. But I do want to thank you, as always, for joining us and for giving us your good information and your good opinions. And I look forward to the next time we chat. And a happy Easter to you, Frank.
Well, likewise, Silvio. And can I only say, stay out of comedy shows on Good Friday.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, don't go see My American Cousin on Fridays. Stay out of that one in particular. Has a bad history, that one. That one has a very bad history, My American Cousin. What's that, the name of it, My American Cousin?
Our American Cousin, yes.
Our American Cousin. That's, if you see that on the billboard somewhere, stay away from that one on Good Friday. Bad things may happen.
That's right. Well, Silvio, happy Easter and a blessed Easter to you, to our audience. God bless all and enjoy it. And
thank you so much, Frank. Thank you so much. And as always, thank you for your time. It's always a real treat to chat with you. Thank you so much. Have a great have a great Easter yourself. Well, thank you for listening, folks. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas with our good friend Frank Burke, who always has a great story to tell. And I love that one about Lincoln on Good Friday. That was absolutely great. Enjoy yourself, everybody. Beautiful here. Enjoy yourself. Have a wonderful day, everybody.